This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 13.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Jonathan and I were just chatting here before shooting this intro. And if you remember back to Jonathan's episode, I kind of gave him some grief about how he's always doing different challenges. And actually, grief is the wrong word because I love it. So what are you up to currently?
That's a great way to start, Mikey. Yeah, grief is a good word too. No, my wife has voluntold me actually in that we are on to a new challenge, and I'm putting this on the podcast where she's going a little bit hardcore, but more I have to be no bread, no desserts. And this time of the year where we have more meetings happening, and yes, they're virtual. I've got some in-person meetings this weekend, even for ABVMA Council. That's hard. There's so many good desserts out there. And along that line, I think last week it was 6 out of 7 days from physical activity. So just get back into it. It's been a while. Lots happening in life. So looking forward to getting back onto these challenge wheels.
All right. We're recording this episode, for those listening, the week after Canadian Thanksgiving, and we'll be coming up to American Thanksgiving here shortly. How long does this challenge go for?
I asked her that. I said, is this even until the end of the month? And she's like, no, this is at least a month. I'm like, oh, no.
So I want an answer. And I want to know what's the consequence if you don't follow through. You said to put you on the spot, so I am.
Oh, you totally are. Okay, it's 1 month. There's no consequences because there's no risk of failure. It just has to happen.
Okay, well, I'm not going to let that slide. There'll be a consequence if on November 13th, you have broken this challenge. So beware.
And I'm leaving it white blank. Sleep or a blank sheet for you to choose?
Well, I gave you the chance to choose and you didn't. Like, no, that's your fault.
You need to join for the challenge then too, buddy.
No, sorry, man.
Oh, come on. Put you on the spot here.
No. Okay. Let's dive in. So another amazing guest. Before I get to introducing her, I'll throw it over to Jonathan for today's quick tip.
Hey, and before we do that, again, we're on the spot today. I'm giving Mike kudos because he's not feeling good today. You look at the YouTube video, he's usually spry, looking sharp. Today, a little bit less so, but he rocked it out. No coughing, held it together. He did awesome. So kudos to Mike before we even get into the episode for everybody that's listening today. Our quick tip today, Candace and I, we sold our rental property. It's a four suite unit. There's things that have to happen through it. We went to the lawyer, signed papers this weekend, and she was doing paperwork over the weekend while she was preparing for Thanksgiving. I said, why is that? She says, we have 18 deals closing this week. In 4 days, she has 18 deals closing. I'm like, wow. She said, yeah, we have 55 deals closing this month. And that astounds me. And we had family in this weekend, and it's busy out there. And yet, when you go into the news, the world is coming to an end. We hear nonstop about COVID, and it's so important. There's so many, you know, challenges that we have in front of us. But when you look locally and you look at your own life and situations, there is still opportunities everywhere. And my quick tip for today is don't let the news drag you down into that abyss, which is so easy. Coming out of that lawyer's office, and wow. You know, at a time in Alberta when the economy is not doing well, we've got COVID pandemic, everything else happening, and there's 55 deals closing this month. Think about all those people that could have said, nope, pandemic's on, you know, let's listen to the news. We're not going forward with this. And yet, guess what? Things are still happening. So if you have opportunities in front of you, go chase them down. Don't listen to the news. Take it for what it is. It's entertainment. It's the negative, and go get it.
I totally agree, Jonathan. Man, that's good. I've consciously stopped watching the news, and it's made an incredible difference in my life. And then I did watch the first Trump-Biden debate simply for entertainment purposes, and it was like the worst decision of my life. It was a train wreck, you know? And
I'm just guessing that was on entertainment, like the entertainment shows. I don't even know what they're called, yeah, because that's how bad it was. And we're no different. Candace and I both watched it just for that fact.
All righty. Okay. This is fun bantering, but on with the episode. So this week, excuse me, we have Dr. Elaine Clemmensen. After graduating from the WCVM in 1991, Elaine's adventures in veterinary medicine have included being an associate, a practice owner, locum, and a volunteer with 8 organizations in 7 different countries. Passionate about leadership, development, and workplace culture, she recently embarked on her latest adventure, founding Evolve Leadership Coaching and Consulting, where she is determined to help veterinary leaders discover the secret sauce that will move their team from surviving to thriving. Currently, she is a student at Royal Roads University studying value-based leadership and executive coaching. Her adventures these days are close to home, but she dreams of riding the Silk Road one day on her bicycle. So in this conversation, we kind of jump in with a little bit of a funny story of Elaine outrunning an ostrich, diving into her backstory where her and her husband, Rob, who is also a veterinarian, graduated and entered into mixed practice in their early days. They had an ownership experience that wasn't so good. And we kind of unpack all of that as Rob and Elaine move forward kind of through some of the fear that could have held them back, but made decisions to consciously move their life forward. They moved to a new province and started their own veterinary clinic, and over the course of 15 to 20 years, built an amazing clinic all around team culture. After exiting their practice, they then set out doing some volunteering and traveling around the world. And during this time traveling and volunteering, Elaine has sort of unlocked some of what she calls her secret sauce ingredients around leadership. And she does share those at the end, so you'll have to stay tuned to check those out. So without any further ado, I give you Dr. Elaine Clemmensen. All right, Elaine, it's so good to finally have you on. We were just chatting here before we turned record on. You know, it's funny, Jonathan and I started this podcast 3 or so months ago, and you and I did not know each other. We had never met before, and it was a mutual contact that put us in touch and said, you know, I think there's some interesting conversations to be had, you know, around this community and around this connection. And it's so nice to have connected with you and have you on.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. And so nice to meet Jonathan this morning. It's funny how it works like that. I was just saying before we came on how this speaks to my heart to have you guys creating a podcast that builds connections. Because I think that's the key as we move forward in our profession and really creating a community where we realize together we're stronger. So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to both of you.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive in. Before we go deep, I have to ask you, excuse me, my curiosity has got the best of me. In your bio, you have a little blurb about the fact that you can outrun an ostrich if your life depends on it. So I have to know what this is about.
I have to. So first I have to correct you, Michael. I could outrun an ostrich when my life depended on it.
But you did, but you did not.
Oh, you know what? So now, I don't know if you guys remember the show Seinfeld, and the character named Elaine, just like me on Seinfeld. Well, my kids tell me I kind of dance like Elaine. And actually, now that I've gotten older, I actually run like Elaine too. So pretty sure I couldn't outrun the ostrich anymore.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So my journey as a veterinarian, I grew up in rural Alberta, central Alberta, and went to the University of Alberta, to WCVM in Saskatoon, graduated and went into practice with my husband, who was a classmate of mine. And we went into practice in, I always was going to be a rural mixed animal practitioner. And we spent a year in central Alberta in a solo doctor practice and decided we really needed to find better mentorship. So after that first year, that first challenging year, like all of us go through in this profession, we ended up joining a practice of three veterinarians who at that time were sort of 15 to 25 years our seniors, or maybe 15 to 20 years our seniors, and really felt like we'd get the mentorship we needed. And one of the practice partners, Ed Dornenbaugh, shout out to Ed if you're watching.
Yeah, totally.
Ed was really involved in a lot of the large animal exotic work. So he did a lot of work with the elk industry in Alberta. He also is an amazing swine practitioner. And Ed was the kind of guy, he would just dive into anything. So when tuberculosis hit the elk herds in Alberta, suddenly that industry was decimated. And with the government payouts, some of the farmers or producers who had been raising elk decided to switch to raising ostriches. And this was northwest of Edmonton. And so Ed, in his fashion, just embraced it wholeheartedly. And there was the other two partners at the time in that practice who really didn't want anything to do with ostrich work. And then there was these two recent graduates, my husband, Rob, and I. And one day Ed's having this conversation and Rob and I are standing there and he's like, I really need one of you guys to come on board. And the ostrich end of the practice is growing so rapidly. I need one of you to come on board and start learning the ostrich work with me. And I kind of turned around and my husband had just like disappeared. He just left the room quietly in his quiet, introverted way. He wasn't there anymore. So it was just me and Ed. And I'm like, sure. So it was a wild ride. It was a lot of fun, actually. Yeah.
That's how awesome. How long did that ostrich run last?
Not very long, Jonathan. And so this would have been, we left that practice in 96. I'm telling you how old I am now, guys. And it was kind of on the way out in 96 when I left. So it kind of ran a phase, I would say, from 92, 93 to 1996, like 3 or 4 years.
3 or 4 years, okay.
You know, the end, it was kind of it was really a big pyramid scheme.
Okay.
It really was. And there's some crazy stories from that period of the weird and wonderful things we did. But it was a lot tougher and a lot faster in those days.
I remember the little glimmer of the ostrich heyday. Now, I was quite young. I remember our 4-H group went to Vetivision at WCVM as a field trip. And this is when ostriches were all the rage. And I have to throw my dad under the bus here. They had an ostrich egg on display with like huge signage around it, like, do not touch. So the first thing he does is grab it and drops it. And I was like, that is the extent of my ostrich veterinary experience. Yeah. So I hope my dad's listening. I have to throw that out there. So,
well, it was crazy. Like, Ed got into, we would ultrasound them for egg binding. Sometimes with egg bound ostriches, you'd have to do surgery. Proventriculotomies were really common. And after sort of working with Ed and learning more about the ostrich industry, Ed was on holidays and we had this young adult ostrich, I think it was around a year old, that had eaten a bunch of hardware, which they would do. Like if I went out to the farm, you couldn't have any kind of jewelry on because they'd grab the earrings and yank them out of your ears. Anything shiny, just like a giant turkey, they'd eat it. And so I'm like, okay, I've been out of vet school maybe 3 years, 4 years at this point. This ostrich needs surgery. And it was right like at the height of the industry, a breeding pair of ostriches worth like 70, 80,000 US. It was crazy. So these birds were super valuable. And I don't know if I should tell this story online. Well, it's way in the past, so I can. And here's Elaine, like just the mixed animal 3 years ago, I graduated, doing a proventriculotomy, knocking this bird down, opening it up. It was really not in great condition and it just would not stop bleeding. And to the point, guys, I was getting my technician to bring me like packages of 4x4 gauze, and I was just like wads of gauze in there trying to stop the bleeding. And the producer's kind of standing there because you do everything in front of the client in our general medicine. So last one of these we had done by Ed, it didn't bleed nearly this much, Elaine. Is this normal? Oh man, I was just channeling my inner Ed to get through that surgery. But I did, and the bird lived. But shortly after that, yeah, things kind of started to crash.
Yeah.
And that was when I left that.
Nice.
That. I actually left mixed animal practice shortly after that.
So was this, I know when you and I were chatting, you kind of defined your early years, your early first few clinics, and said, you know, you need a plan, right? Because you'd come out of your mixed animal practice. Can you kind of walk us through that? Like you alluded to, you didn't have the mentorship that you wanted. So kind of how you felt your way through those first few years?
Yeah, you know, I look back and there was little hidden mentors in there. And honestly, some of them were the clients and the producers. But we got into our very first practice with a lovely older veterinarian who was really ready for practice succession. And I think he had hoped Rob and I would, husband and wife, fresh out of vet school, we'd take over that practice. And in the end, it was a super challenging year. He was a great guy, but he was just ready to be done, I think. But it forced Rob and I, as a married couple, to learn how to have each other's backs. And so many people have said, how could you not only practice together, but actually lead a team and run a practice together for our entire career? And I think we really learned those skills in those first sort of 5 years in mixed animal practice. And so when we went looking for mentorship, we were pretty young. I was like you, Michael, that I graduated from vet school. I was 24 when I got in after 2 years of pre-vet. Rob was 26. And so we went into this practice with these experienced partners and eventually bought into that practice. So we worked as associates there for 2 years. They invited us to buy in. And, you know, that was just what you did. Like, okay, we need to settle down. Let's become owners. But there wasn't really the mentorship to make us part of the ownership team. It was sort of like, pay us a bunch of money. Back in those days, you still paid a lot of goodwill. Buy a quarter of the assets. Now you're partners. And we're going to just keep treating you like associate vets. So there wasn't a lot of talk about business or leadership or management. And things, in hindsight, things were on a rocky ground with the relationships in that practice when we bought in. And unfortunately, it wasn't a true partnership in that there was partners, there was a dominant partner who called the shots, basically. So, you know, obviously, this is my reflection. What started to happen is when the elk industry crashed, then the ostrich industry crashed, two new practices opened up in our practice area. For the first time in 20 years, that practice had a negative growth. And somebody was looking for a scapegoat, and it became my husband and I.
So how do you deal with that, I guess, you know?
Well, you know what? It's like every challenge in life. It was a defining moment, to be honest. And we went back and forth from saying, you know what? One day my husband would be, they're right. I suck. I'm terrible at this. I'm an awful veterinarian. Maybe I should leave the profession, Elaine. And then the next day I would have those feelings. And finally, it was just saying, you know, life, we've got a choice here. We can let them define us, ourselves, and we can stay in this really negative, horrible situation, or we can get out. And at that time, things were complicated as well, because there was involvement of some of our partners with the Alberta Vet Medical Association. And Rob and I really felt like we would be blacklisted in the large animal world in Alberta. So an opportunity showed up and we jumped on it. And we also were 3 months pregnant. We decided to start a family. And, you know, everything, it's kind of like the straw that breaks the camel's back. When there aren't good, solid relationships, suddenly there's some financial stress in the practice. Then one of your associate vets tells you, hey, guess what? We're having a baby and the baby's coming right in the middle of calving season. And back in the day, they literally looked at me and said, well, what are your expectations? Well, I'm a partner. I'm going to have a baby. I'm going to work right up of C-sections, do it all right till I pop. And then I'll take 3 months off and I'll be back to work part-time. So all of those things were like the straw that broke the camel's back. And I think it was really having a solid relationship with my husband and partner that we got each other out of it and said, this isn't where we want to raise our kids. This isn't the stress we want to deal with every day. We need to make a big change.
Yeah. That's so important, having that support.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was also having that self-awareness piece to be able to say, the vision I have had of my life as a veterinarian, this I'm going to be the modern day James Herriot, and this is who I am, and being able to change that vision and say, this isn't who my husband is, and this isn't what I want anymore, and it's okay to figure out what your new vision is. That can be really tough. And I think sometimes making that physical break, so leaving Alberta, leaving rural mixed practice, going and doing a six-month locum for a locum for 6 months, and figuring out, what do we want? What are our strengths? Yeah. What are we good at? That's helped us make the shift.
Yeah. I love how you said it as well. We have a choice here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was your choice to decide. So I guess with that, tell us, you know, you make a choice to leave. And so what's the next phase for you and your husband?
So I love that. You're right. You can be a victim of your life, or you can be an actor that takes advantage of the opportunities that come up. But sometimes, you know what? Sometimes you have to wallow in that victimhood for a bit until you figure it out, hey? So the next choice was made out of sheer desperation. 6 month locum is ending. The baby is brewing, and we do not know what we're doing. We have no job. And we realize we do not want to go back into a partnership. We really don't want to be an associate vet and work in a potentially toxic environment again. And so what was left to us was buy our own practice. So we hustled, and literally at one point I started just cold calling veterinarians from the BC Vet directory who had graduated like in the 60s, thinking these guys are going to be ready to retire. And I just call them and like, hey, have you thought of selling your practice? We're interested in buying a practice.
That's so good.
We ended up buying this little one doctor practice in Trail, BC, and literally lived in a motel, signed the papers on a new practice, drove to Edmonton where all our furniture was in storage, loaded up a U-Haul, and went into labor on the way back to British Columbia. We'd stopped at my parents' farm in central Alberta, and I went into labor a month early. It was 4 weeks before my due date. Probably stress played a role in that. And so my brother and Rob took the U-Haul to BC. I stayed in the hospital in Red Deer and had this new baby, and showed up in Rosland, British Columbia with a baby, a empty rental house full of boxes, and a new practice to get off the ground in 2 weeks. No employees hired, nothing. But you know how you do it is you go, this is my life, and I have control of the decisions I make. And whatever happens, it's a heck of a lot better than where I came from. That's how we did it.
Wow. Yeah. When I hear that story, you know, you said kind of driven by desperation, and it cranks the urgency dial way up. Like, you only have one choice, and that is make this work. You know, yes. Can you think back to that? Like, how are you feeling in that time of your life?
You know, I think at that time we were after doing the 6 month locum, it was a great opportunity in that the owner of the practice had a partner who lived abroad, and she wanted to be with him for the winter months. And she literally said, run it like it's yours. These two unknowns, she let us come into her practice, run it like it's yours. And it was the first time we'd ever worked just the two of us in our own. It was a locum practice. And we realized, you know what? This is really cool. We can do this. So we were feeling empowered at that point. And then it becomes about visualizing the big picture of what you want and starting to make a plan. Here's what we need to do to make that happen. We need a business plan. Okay, we need to do an entrepreneurship course and be sure we're cut out for practice ownership. Okay, what do we want? What do we want our practice to, what's our mission for this practice? And what's the bigger vision? And more important to Rob and I was, what kind of culture do we want to develop? Now, back at that stage of my career, I didn't think in those terms, but I realize now I have that language. We really wanted something different than the practices we'd worked in. We wanted a place where our employees could come and feel ownership, feel like they were part of something and were important to the outcomes for our patients and clients. Yeah.
So I just got a couple quick questions on that. What year are we at roughly right now?
Right now we're at year 1997.
And this is a very naive question, but I'll ask it anyway. Were these conversations happening like in the vet industry in 1997, or were you guys quite a bit on the leading edge?
They weren't happening in the circles I worked in, Michael. And I think even then, thinking back to conversations with my colleagues and friends and classmates, people were struggling to find practices where they felt valued as an associate, or they felt like their input was being heard. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Okay, question, quick question. Specifics on, you're at the start of ownership in a new environment without employees that you had known in the past. You have a blank slate.
Exactly.
How did you go about setting the purpose, mission, drive to make it feel different? Because there's a whole bunch of people that say that, but really when you look at it behind the scenes, it's no different than anything else. What differed about yours and Rob's practice? How did you do it is what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. And I think about that, Jonathan, because we didn't really have any mentors. Mm-hmm. It was, and we're jumping from being mixed animal vets to trying to reinvent ourselves as high quality small animal companion animal vets
in a town you didn't know anybody in. So you have no preconceived relationships to build off of.
You know what? I think we both had a mindset of learning from our mistakes, and there were a lot of mistakes, both leadership mistakes, management mistakes, and patient care mistakes, HR mistakes. And we really had a desire. So the vision came from us that we want a practice where we love coming to work every day and we can say good morning to our team, how you doing? And have them say, I'm doing awesome, or I'm kind of struggling because of this. And we could have those open conversations where people felt safe, because we had never had that in our professional career. So we had that vision, and if I'm really honest, it didn't happen overnight. It was that failing forward, but then having this vision was so powerful and so important to us that we were willing to dig in and do the work and read the veterinary journals and the management journals and go to CE and sit through, you know, not just medical sessions, but management sessions, so we could go, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe we should lead morning rounds and get everybody on the same page. Oh, we don't just need triangle time where we're worried about, you know, process and how we get there and what the big goal is. We also need circle time so people connect and feel like they're part of this. So it was a journey of probably the first 10 years of figuring it out, figuring out what my strengths were versus my husband, Rob's strengths, and making mistakes and going, well, that sucked. How do we fix this? And I think that's the key, is we're so focused in our profession on having the right answer instead of asking the right questions.
Oh, I like that.
So feeling like you're a failure if you don't have that right answer. And I love this. This is something I learned more recently through my leadership studies, is nothing is irreversible in life. You can always circle back. You can always say to your team, you know what? Yesterday I was a real bitch and I am sorry. And I'm going to try harder because you guys deserve better. And you know what? If you can do that as a leader, you know what you've just done? You have created a space for them to bring that type of their whole self to work too.
Absolutely. And they would appreciate that so much.
Yeah, but it's hard to do that because we have this paradigm of, I'm the owner, I'm the leader, I'm the veterinarian, I'm the head technician, I should know. And I can't show that I don't know because that would be perceived as me being weak. And it's exactly the opposite. It's about creating a collaborative environment instead of this environment of sort of hierarchical leadership. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, no, it's great. And I love the little like tangent we're on here because it is so important. One question that jumps out to me is, as you're building this team during the hiring process, were you specifically looking for those people, but how did you find those people that shared your vision?
Yeah, and that too would be a process. And I think over the 20 years that we owned the practice, it evolved. And it started with Mark Opperman's practice management book. And here's the forms that I ask when I do an interview, to realizing what was more important was that they shared the same values as Rob, myself, and the team members that had stuck with us for many, many years. And so that kind of grew over time. And eventually, I would say it was probably about 8 or 10 years before we sold the practice, we went through a little period of a bit of a revolving door. I always prided myself on having, because I did a lot of the actual leadership, all the HR in our practice, all the training and mentoring. I was kind of the go-to person that the staff would come to. And Rob did more of the payroll, the PST, the GST, building maintenance, the numbers stuff, which is not my favorite thing to deal with. So over time, I started getting kind of burnt out because I'm like, man, we had this great technician. She had a baby. They're moving out of the area. Wow, we have another great technician. Her husband got transferred. And I started to feel like, okay, we need people that stick. It's a lot of work to hire, to train, to, you know, mentor and get them really part of our team. We got to think outside the box. And I went to a management conference and I came back and led the team through a series of core values exercises. And we really dug into what our practice core values were. We never had a nice mission on the wall. It was just sort of, I guess, more understood by our team that compassionate professional care for the family pet, non-judgmental. Doesn't matter whether people come in driving a Mercedes or a rusted out Toyota Tacoma, they all get the same options and level of care. We treat everybody with respect. So we kind of had this idea of who we were, but I started to look at, well, I think people need to know what we value. And I need to then use those values to help pick employees that are going to fit with this culture and this team. And also it became a way to sort of say, these are the things we don't want in our culture. And when they showed up, it's really powerful. If you have someone struggling, to sit down with them and say, you know, I noticed this, and I'm just wondering from your perspective, when you were gossiping with Susan in the staff room, how does that fit in with our values? Because we had this little, you know, paw print with our core values on the dog toes and our secondary values in the pad of the paw. So, you know, when you're gossiping, how do you think that fits in with this hospital's values? And it was meaningful because they helped pick those values and put it together with us. So that was a real turning point. And I think now as I look back, there's still so many things I could have done differently. I was not a micromanager, but I was a control freak. And that's part of the journey. You just keep learning and growing, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I like that, like stepping into those difficult conversations, right? To not let it snowball. So, yes. So with your journey, so you and Rob are building this practice. You had it, was it 15 or 20 years or so?
20 years, yeah.
And the travel bug kind of bites, or you guys go away to Africa.
I'll back up a bit because I always have loved traveling. And so we ended up having the baby that was on the way and arrived right before we took over ownership. 3 years later, we had our second child. James is our son, Hannah, our daughter. And we live in this little half-ski town of Rosslyn, this privileged life of very little diversity. And very early on, a priority for me was our kids need to get off the pumpkin patch and see what the rest of the world is like and how they live. So we didn't want to go to Disneyland or the all-inclusive in Mexico. We wanted to show them the real world. So we started planning around that, and every month we put aside some money into our travel fund so that we could take the kids on adventures to different areas in the world. And I think as a parent, it was probably one of the best things I did for them, for both of them in different ways. So as we're growing this practice in a small community, no emergency clinic, we, for the first 5 years, we are on call 7 days a week, 365 days a year, unless we can find a locum. And then over time, we built some relationships with neighboring practices. We developed a call sharing schedule. We developed a locum swapping schedule with another veterinary couple who lived 3 hours away. And our practice grew to the point that we started bringing in some associate vets. And Rob and I started to find it easier to have a life outside of veterinary medicine. But through those early years, there was a book that we always read our kids called Pizza for Breakfast. And in this little storybook, there's a husband and wife, Frank and Zelda. And they run a pizza restaurant, a little pizza restaurant. And it's in a town with a hat and glove shop. So one day, the hat and glove shop goes under and goes out of business. And suddenly, there's no customers at the pizza restaurant. And Frank and Zelda look at each other and say, "We have to make a plan." And just then, in walks a customer, a little man, who sits down and orders a pizza. And they get so excited, and they rush around, and they make the best pizza you can imagine. They line up the anchovies and the olives just so, and they take it to the little man, and he eats it. And then he tells them he has no money to pay them. And they're very angry. But the little man says, I can't pay you, but I'm going to give you whatever you wish for. So Frank and Zelda didn't really believe him, but they said, "Well, we wish for more customers." And they go home. And the next morning, they wake up, go down to their little pizza restaurant, which was below their home. And lo and behold, there's a lineup of people waiting for pizza. And they're so happy, and they rush around. But pretty soon, they're exhausted. And Frank looks at Zelda and says, "Zelda, we need a plan." And lo and behold, in walks the little man, has a pizza, and can't pay them, and asks them what they want. And they say, "We want more employees. We need more staff to run this restaurant." So you know how this goes. The next day, they've got more staff. And then pretty soon, they've outgrown this building that they're selling pizza in. And Zelda looks at Frank and says, "Frank, we need a plan." And in walks the little man. So how this story ends is eventually Frank and Zelda look at each other and say, or look at the little man and say, "We want it to go back to the way it was." And the last page of the storybook is Frank and Zelda are in their bathing suits with a food truck selling pizza on the beach. So Rob and I read this story to our kids, and we loved it. And as our life got crazy and we had no time for ourselves or for each other, it was the staff, the clinic, the kids, we'd look at each other and say, "Frank, we need a plan." Or Rob would look at me and say, "Zelda, we need a plan." And our plan usually involved throwing on a backpack and just hitting the road, just disappearing into the world. So when it really hit me, Michael, as you were talking about the trip to Africa. We bought the practice in 1997. In 2015, it was our 25th anniversary. And our daughter was on a Rotary exchange in Brazil, I believe. And our son was in his first year of university, because we traveled every trip we took, our kids went with us. And we always wanted to go to Africa. That was our dream. So we went to Africa, and we had 4 weeks. And we had left our new associate vet, who was interested in ownership, and who really we were mentoring with the hopes she'd want to be an owner. We kind of left her in charge and said, "This is your chance to check it out, see how it goes." And we headed to Africa, and it was on that trip, you know, you need to create a space for reflection sometimes. Something clicked, and I just knew I needed to make a big change. I couldn't keep burning the candle at both ends the way I had been for 20 years. And so I got home and said to Rob, something's got to give. And we brainstormed, we need a plan. What's our plan? So it came down to either I needed to stop doing veterinary medicine and just lead and manage the practice, or we needed to hire a manager, or we needed to sell the practice. And combined with that, I'd always had in my mind, I wanted to go out at the top of my game. I didn't want to just be one of these vets that sticks around because the money is good and you're too scared to make a change. Again, that being an agent in your own future and what do you want for your life? And Rob looked at me and said, well, you know, 10 more years. If we just stick it out for 10 more years, we'll be set, Elaine. And I said, I can't. Oh my God, 10 more years? It means I've been freaking practicing for 30 years. That's insane. I can't do 10 more years. And then he said, okay, 5 more. And you know, I burst into tears and I just said, I don't even know if I can do 5 more days. This is why I love this man so much. He said, okay, let's call an evaluator and let's see what it's worth. Put it on market. So that was 2 years before we sold. And then it was the journey to figuring out how to price our practice. Was our associate vet interested in ownership? Making sure we did this right so that at the end of it all, we were still had a good relationship with our team, with our associate vet and our other associate vet. And in the end, it worked out the way practice transitions should work out. And we found ourselves finished our 3 months of, ended up being 2 months of working as her associates and supporting her leadership journey for a few months till she was ready. And then in a small community, it just felt right to put on a backpack and leave and let her make it hers. As long as we were still here, Rob and I kind of felt it was going to be tougher for her to really make it her own practice. And she knew she could reach out to us if she needed advice or mentoring. Yeah, so we put our backpack on and got a one-way ticket back to Botswana and started volunteering and traveling around the world.
Wow, that is such a cool story.
So it sounds cool, but there was a lot of fear. There was a lot of sleepless nights for me going, what the hell are we doing? Like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, and we talked about that when you and I spoke earlier, you know, recognizing the fear, the awareness, but then kind of stepping in it. Like that's a common theme in your story is taking control of your life despite fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it is, Michael. Yeah. You know, so when we made that decision, we really weren't sure what would happen if we'd find a buyer, you know. You have an idea what your practice is worth, but most of us think our practice is worth a lot more than it actually is. We had a well-managed practice. We had a brand new facility, but you don't know what is enough. And you don't know, well, what are we don't want to be practice owners, but how are we going to like locum work? Do we want to be locums? Like all those questions that go through your mind. And I think, not sure where I was going with this now, but I think it's a matter of looking at how you want to live your life. And I know when it really hit me as my family, my Albertan family, I remember my sister saying to me, but aren't you worried you won't have enough, Elaine? Aren't you worried you're going to run out? And I was more worried that I was going to get to the end and look back and say, holy smokes, I missed the point. And I never did all those things I wanted to do. Well, I could still do them. Well, I still was healthy enough to do them.
Wow.
So it kind of comes from where your mindset is, I guess.
Such a hard transition point. I've watched this within my own family over the last decade and knowing what's enough, what's not enough, when to make that transition. How do you finish on top? Are you already past your top and you don't even know it? And then in the veterinary space with, you know, corporate consolidators in there and different price points, there's such a guessing game happening. And especially, you know, you're in a little bit more of a rural setting, wrapping that all together, like you said, is there a transition that's even going to be possible? A quick question, Mike, to jump in here for a second is, when you were making the plan and it was 2 years from the time that you made the decision to the time that you sold, did you follow through a plan that was set in paper? Did you follow something that, you know, you guys talked through on a weekly, monthly basis? What did that plan look like in terms of tactics for you? And or was it ever evolving in each other's heads?
It was a combination of ever evolving and sort of setting down some timelines. So the first step we felt was we need outside expertise to come up with a fair formula for valuing this practice and exploring what those different valuation formulas look like, but also being who we are, it was about making sure it was fair, because we knew if we put something out there that was ridiculous, that any potential buyers that might show up would not be interested. And then the second part of that plan looked at, well, what are the options who might be interested in a practice in a small community where there's no emergency clinic? What are our options? And we did have the option of looking, of courting corporate buyers. We were a big enough practice. At the time, one of the bigger practices in the West Kootenays, versus the associate vet that had expressed some interest in ownership and sort of mentoring her. And you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, but in the end we did. And we did that because our associate was very interested. And so then we started down the road of just having some really open, honest conversations about what does this look like? How much time does she need? Helping mentor her through, well, the first step is, you know, financing. How are you going to secure financing? She hired her own advisor. But, you know, I think what made it work is we have a really great relationship with the new practice owner. And at a certain point, we sat down over beers and said, here's what's going to happen. Our advisor wants to get us the highest price. Your advisor wants to get you the lowest price. The reality is somewhere in the middle. But what matters to Rob and I at the end of the day is we can sit down and have a beer, and she literally lives like 2, 3, 4 houses. She lives right across the back alley from me. I can see her kids playing in the backyard. And we said, we want to watch your kids grow up and chat with you over the back fence. And we want to be friends at the end of this. And that to us is more important than anything else. And so there were times where we thought, maybe we should see what the corporates would give us and make sure we're getting a fair price. And we said, you know what? No. We've done our due diligence. This is progressing, and let's play it out. And it did work out.
Nice. So you trusted the process, and then you still went with your guts, your emotions, and made sure that was all available and clear for your counterparty, who is now the owner.
Yeah. And then I think too, speaking to that fear, I just always had a belief that if you put yourself out there in the world and are willing to try new things and to be open to failure, you're going to figure it out and you're going to find opportunities that you never expected were there. And it's a scary thought to jump into this new life, but at the same time, we both were ready for it. So, you know, it's that process, working through it, having people that you trust that can talk you through some of those fears. And then at a certain point, you just have to go for it. Yeah. And nothing is irreversible. So what? If it doesn't work, is it the end of the world? You know what? We're both healthy. We both have experience as veterinarians. We can find another job. We could start another practice if that's what we really wanted. It's, you know what? Just, by the way, if you watch this, April, we don't want to start another practice. Don't worry. awesome. But you have to just trust yourself. And yeah, trust the process, Jonathan.
Okay, Lane. So, I mean, I do want to, it's so easy chatting with you. I do want to touch on, because your new sort of current role, you're studying at Royal Roads, you're diving into kind of leadership coaching, and you and I had touched on the secret sauce, like distilling all of your years of experience and wisdom kind of down to a few key points. Can you maybe touch on those quickly? For our guests to give them just kind of the tangible summary of, you know, 20 to 30 years of valuable experience.
Yeah. And, you know, these 2 years we did of volunteering, that's what I really thought about. I think I told you that, Michael, is how can a bunch of people from different cultures, different experiences, different, sometimes language barriers, how do we come together under the most challenging circumstances and deliver veterinary care in these developing world conditions? It just fascinated me. And as I participated in different projects, leadership was really the key. But also there was a few things that volunteer experience forced us into. And I think the The first one was letting go of your ego. Letting go of your ego and moving from me, I, what I want, what I need, to we, and what is for the greater good. So by letting go of the ego, for example, on a volunteer project, you show up in Botswana and you're using drugs that have been expired by 5 years. You're using injectable anesthetics with things like xylazine that we never use in our practices at home. You're operating on dogs that have rampant tick-borne disease and 2 platelets left, so they bleed like crazy. And very quickly, you are thrust into this environment where it doesn't matter how much skill and experience you have, you're a beginner again, and everybody around you is a beginner. And it's an incredibly humbling experience. And you realize you need to reach out and rely on your team members and ask for help if you're going to survive. And so I think looking at that shift from individual recognition and achievement and importance to really what is a team and what does it mean? We all talk about a team, but I think we do it really poorly in most of our practices. And the other thing I think is, there's so many pieces to all of this, but the three big ones, the other one is a really powerful purpose. A purpose that gets you out of bed and charged up and excited about what you're doing. So whether it's, you know what, this community in Mazunte, Oaxaca State, Mexico has rampant overpopulation of dogs, and the dogs are eating the turtle eggs on the turtle nesting beaches, and I am all about turtle conservation, and this is meaningful, and I feel like I'm part of something bigger than myself. Or whether it's in our own practices, we have to give our teams that powerful vision that makes them feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. And then I think the third one, and this is just part of why I love the stage I'm at in life and I can donate so much time to volunteer projects, is that gratitude piece. And really thinking about how very privileged we are and like leaning into that. We've got so much to be grateful for. And suddenly when you focus, it's being intentional about where you place your intention. When you start to focus on the good things, the positive things, the things you appreciate about your team members, the things you appreciate about your clients, suddenly things start to shift. And just think how powerful that would be if everybody on our team embraced that mindset.
Yeah.
So that's my top three.
That's awesome. I love it. I mean, that's such a good, especially that gratitude and where you sort of intend to focus is very powerful.
You said it.
So with that, Elaine, thank you so much. I mean, I could keep talking to you for hours, but
I could talk to you guys too. It's been great.
We went by too fast. I'm surprised. I looked over and went, holy, how'd this happen already?
I know. I looked down here at the clock and I was like, oh no. I was like, I got to start wrapping this up. So with that, Elaine, we are going to dive into our impact round, series of questions. Answer as you will. So with that, are you a cat or a dog person?
Oh, I love the little weirdos in life. Cat. Yeah.
All right. True or false? I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a kid.
True. I went through a fashion designer phase, but came back to vet med.
Nice. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
Oh, poodle mechanic.
Oh, we haven't had that one. That one's original. That's awesome. What is your favorite hobby?
Bicycles, bicycles, bicycles. I went from the motorized bicycle. I was a motorcyclist for years when I was in Alberta. I love mountain biking. I love traveling and seeing the world from the seat of a bicycle. And I've just gotten into bike packing.
Nice. I think you said in your bio too, one of your goals or bucket list is to bike the Silk Road.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll get to do it, but we'll see.
Yeah. That's very cool. What in this world are you most grateful for?
Oh, you know, I am most grateful for my partner in veterinary medicine, in life, in parenting, my husband, Rob, and my family we created, my kids, James and Hannah, who really inspire me to be a better human being. They're so awesome.
Fantastic. Okay, Elaine, as we move into kind of our last question, if anyone is looking to get a hold of you, would like to follow along your journey as you keep kind of diving into more of this leadership and coaching, where can they reach out to you?
They can find me on my website, which is evolvecoachconsult.com, or can email me through evolvecoachconsult@gmail.com.
Excellent. Okay, we'll move in here to the final word to you. Anything to add in, Jonathan?
No, not at all. Just a very big thank you. There's some rabbit holes there I wanted to go down, but in the essence of time, we could not today. So thank you. Really great story. I want to meet your husband too. It sounds like a great life partner and business partner. So this has been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan.
All right, Elaine. So as always, the last word goes to you. What message do you want to leave for the veterinary community?
So I'm hoping I can leave two messages because I'm so chatty. But the first one is I want to say you as veterinarians, you guys, you matter. There is something in our human DNA that we need a connection with the natural world. We crave that connection. And pets are part of that connection. And every day you have the privilege of going to work and honoring that amazing bond that people have with their pets or their animals or their livestock. And I'm just like, how cool is that? So embrace it. You matter. You matter so much in this world. And I think the other one is, don't be scared to step into your fear. Sometimes you just have to close your eyes, take a big breath, and trust when you step off the ledge, you are going to be presented with opportunities you never imagined. Just embrace it and go for it.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please shared the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.